Right, so we are holding on Mem Hei Amud Aleph, about the middle of the wide line, the line against Hakeha. Okay, we were mentioning about the case, the Mishnah had mentioned the case where a person has an extra finger or an extra toe, where we said if he cuts it off, he's still a Baal Mum. We said provided that it had a bone in it. So we mentioned in that connection, we had Rabbi Yochanan's statement and we had Rab's statements about does an extra finger like that, what are the genuine of Tumah with it. So we had Rabbi Yochanan telling us that it has the tumor of every other limb in the body, and that counts towards the minimum of 125 bones that are able to make a person tummy boil. And we said that, and we said that's talking about where it has two things in its favor. Where number one, it's nisperas hagavayad, it's in a row with the other fingers, and number two, it has a bone in it. So even though it doesn't have a fingernail, which prevents it from being a full-fledged finger, nevertheless, it can still be considered that. As opposed to Rab had said a different expression that it's not metamed ba'oil, and we said that is where it only has one thing in its favor, where it has a bone, but it's not in a row with the other fingers, and it doesn't have a fingernail.
You think it's the opposite, actually? When it's not in the row, it should metamed.
No, when it's not in the row, then it's not considered a real finger. Unless it has a bone and it has a nail, fine, then it can be considered a finger after a fashion.
Only a real finger from the tummy.
Right. Well, it can be metamid ba'oihel, we're talking about. Metamid mago hamasa, either way. So we said one idea is because the bone in it typically is at least the size of a barley grain, and that's enough to be metamid mago hamasa by itself. The other reason we said is because, fine, minatoda, it shouldn't be metamid at all. Midrabanan, we want it to be metamid because people are going to easily confuse the case where it's in a row with the other fingers versus not. But we want to make a hecker so you don't burn truma and kodshim, and therefore we made it that it's not metamid barley. Okay. So now let's talk more about the issue of the number of bones in the body in general. Shnanhos, and we learned in the Mishnah in Arlis, Rov bin Yonoi v'Rov bin Yonoi shall mess. One of the ways in which a person can become tamei mess is if you have Rov bin Yonoi, most of the frame of a person, or v'Rov bin Yonoi shall mess, or most of, or the majority of the number of bones of a mess. Even though in each of these cases, let's say you don't have a total of a quarter calf of bones, now you can have, for example, let's say these bones come from a baby or a miscarried baby or whatever, a baby that wasn't even full term, so the total number, the Rosh Binyan and Rosh Binyan, doesn't even add up to a quarter of a calf, but nevertheless, they're Matame on the grounds of Rosh Binyan and Rosh Binyan alone. So those Tmei and those are also Matame a person. So, Tanarabonan, so that's what the Mishnah just mentions, Rov bin Yonoi and Rov bin Yonoi, without explaining the details. Tanarabonan, we learn in the Braisa, Ezo Rov bin Yonoi, what is considered the definition of the majority of the frame of the person, the majority of the height, is...
How many bones?
That's what we have to see. So the answer is, Shnei Shekayim v'Yerech Echad, v'Yerech Echad. If you have two leg bones and one thigh bone or more, that's enough to be considered Rov bin Yonoi, because in an adult, those bones constitute the majority of their height. What is two lower leg bones and one thigh bone, with one upper leg bone. The lower leg bones, they're called, I don't know what they're officially called, the tibia and the fibula and whatever. So you have the two bones of the lower leg and the one, right, the femur, when I said the thigh bone is the femur. You have this bone over here, the long bone in the upper part of the leg. And then you have the tibia and the fibula and whatever, which are the two bones of the lower leg.
So which one?
So that's what we're saying. So we're saying if you have those three together, from a body, then that's enough to be metame a person, b'mago, v'masa, uva oil. Less than that, then it's metame b'mago, v'masa, because you have it. So it's a bone larger than the size of a barley grain, but it's not oil, right? Okay. Ezo Rov min Yonoi, what is the definition of Rov min Yonoi? That would be Kuf Chotei, 125 bones. So, Amale Ravina LaRava, so Ravina asks Rava the question, why do we need to be told that figure? We know from the Mishnayos in Aholus that a person has 248 Evarim, 248 limbs. Again, I mentioned yesterday, modern medicine will note them as 206. But first of all, that's talking about once a person's bones have all fused together as they're supposed to. The number 248 could be talking about an earlier stage of development where you still have some.
The skull, how many bones are there?
For example, the Mishnah mentions, if I remember correctly, 9 bones in the skull. So 9, yeah. Yeah, so, uh, so So it all depends how you look at it. You can be talking about, for example, before various bones in the body have knit together. You have earlier, for example, when a person reaches puberty, you have those, you know, you have some of the long bones have epiphyses or whatever, however you pronounce it, whatever. In other words, the point is those can be considered separate bones maybe, and then fine, and eventually when a person matures, then those fuse together and they become one bone. But halacha might consider them separate bones because at the time when a person reaches puberty, they are actually separate. That's one possibility. There's also the fact that, again, that you have various sesamoid bones in the body. The kneecaps are two very obvious prominent ones. And you have others, which modern medicine doesn't consider them bones, but halakha might. So whatever. You have a figure of 248. So the question is, Ravina is asking, we know mathematically that the majority of 248 is 125. What does the Tana need to tell us? Is the Tana teaching us math? Is the Tana coming to tell us math? Does he have to tell us that 125 is a majority of 248? No. So the answer is no. Kamash Malon, the reason why the Tana has to mention the number is he wants to tell us Kidatanya, as we learn in another Braisa. Suppose you have a person who is missing many of the normal limbs, many of the normal bones that a person should have. Sha'in Bayala Masayim, suppose he has only 200. Instead of 248. So Rashi describes, let's say a person is missing two fingers on each hand and two toes on each foot. So they're missing a total of eight. They're missing a total of eight extremities. Each one has six bones in it. Because you have, for example, the bones of the actual finger itself, and then you have the bones in the palm of the hand that reach towards that, and the same thing with the sole of the foot. So you wind up missing six bones per each of those eight digits that are missing. So you're missing 48, so the person only has 200. Or if he has extra bones, meaning, for example, he has 281. Now, how would that be? So Rashi describes like this. We're going to discuss soon in the Gemara, we're going to discuss in a few lines the idea that women have more avarim than men. As well, we'll discuss the details soon. So now, suppose then that we're going to mention in the Gemara that she has up to five extra avarim more than a man. So therefore, she starts out with a larger number to begin with. She starts out with 253, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, the exact figures. Then if you have, suppose that she has extra fingers and extra toes, so then you end up with 24, then you end up with 24 more bones, so therefore you end up with 277. Rashi says, I'm not sure where you got the extra four. Rabbeinu Gershom says, okay, because if you have extra fingers or extra toes, then it means you also have extra bones in the wrist or in the ankle or whatever that lead to them. Same idea, whatever. So even if a person has many fewer bones than normal or many more bones than normal, nevertheless, kulan oil on the minion kuf hafei, nevertheless, those extra things still count as a varim. They count towards the 125. And that's the point, in other words, because zilbasa ruba de'inshi, you go according to the majority of people. In other words, you don't say, for example, in the case of a person, the first case, let's say, where a person has only 200 bones, so we're going to say, okay, roiv minyan with such a person is 101 bones, so as long as you have 101 bones from their skeleton, that's enough to be in the kame. No, you still need 125. And vice versa, if you have a person with 281, again, even though 125 is a lot less than a half, nevertheless, it's still, because you go according to the majority of people, and the majority of people are 248. So it's always 125. That's the point of the Braisa mentioning 125 to tell us that number is always fixed regardless of the actual number of avarim that this particular person has. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ma'aseh b'talmid of Rabbi Shmuel. What happened once with the talmidim of Rabbi Shmuel, sheshalku zoyna achas, they boiled the body of a certain zoyna, shenishayva tzreif al ha-melech, which had been condemned to be burnt by the king. Wait, we'll talk in a second how they were allowed to do that. Anyway, so they did that. Let's talk now. So you have actually the Node of Yehuda, the Chassam Sofer, among others, deal with this in connection with the question, well, are you allowed to do dissections? Are you allowed to do autopsies? That sort of thing. The one answer the Chassam Sofer mentions over here is, the Pashtus wasn't a Jewish king, and Rabbi Shmuel's times they don't have Jewish kings, so it must be that she was condemned by a Goyish court. But Sam Stoker says, okay, with, in general, when you have the whole issue with autopsies and with and with the experiment dissections and whatnot, there's two different issues. Number one, you have an issue called nivul hames that you're treating the dead body, which has a certain kedusha to it. You're treating it casually, or you're desecrating it by cutting it up and whatever. And the other issue is having hanah from a mess. So as far as the first point, the Chassam Sofer says this zona over here may have been a goiter, and in that case, the issue of nivul hames doesn't apply so much to them. Their bodies have less kedusha. Because, okay, you know, Chavavavim Shindivar B'Selim, fine, they were human, Goyim created B'Selim Elikim as well, but still their bodies weren't used for mitzvahs while they were alive, like the Jews were, and therefore they don't have that same degree of kedusha that you should say that nivul hames, that desecrating the corpse itself should be a problem. As far as the other matter of Hanah, there's a number of different answers to that. One of them is that they're trying to learn Torah from it, and therefore that's not considered Hanah, mitzvah lav l'hames. There's a different explanation, I think. Because we're going to learn from it, how many Avodim a person actually has.
So it's 1K, after that, once we know it's
not. Okay, so that's the point. We're not saying they're doing it again and again. In this case, they did it once. The Ben Yoyada, I think it is, says that there may be a different vote. Maybe the vote was that actually, when we say that she was condemned to be burnt, maybe the actual sentence of death was that she should be boiled. So therefore, the Talmudim of Rabbi Shmuel, they themselves didn't boil her, but once her body is being, once she's being boiled alive anyway, then they took the opportunity to see, okay, let's count, maybe they executed her, and then they boiled her body, I don't know, whatever it is, anyway, they figured they might as well take advantage and see, we boil it, that separates the bones cleanly, and it gets the flesh off them, and therefore it makes it easier to count. So in other words, not that they took a body which otherwise would have gotten a decent burial and did this with it, because maybe that would be also, maybe anyway, this was what she was condemned for, this is what she was condemned to happen to her anyway, and therefore they took advantage of the situation. Anyway, whatever it is, so they did that. So they counted up the number of Avodim, and they found 252. So the question is, the Mishnah in Aulis tells us it's 248, so where are an extra four coming from? So they went and told Rabbi Shmuel, Amar lahem, so he tells his Talmidim, Shema b'isha b'daktim, is it possible, you're telling me you found 252, maybe you checked the woman, which in fact they did, because it was a zayna, shahos it's la'akos of shnei tzirim or shnei delosis. The pasuk adds, as we're going to quote, that a woman has two hinges and two doors. What those mean in terms of modern anatomy, I have no idea. But a woman's pelvis has to open up for a baby to come through. So the Gemara understands, in other words, that certain parts of the pelvis are considered, again, maybe they fuse together later in life, maybe earlier in life they're actually separate. Whatever it is, they're considered, that the Torah would consider them to be separate avodim. Tanya, and in fact, we learn in a b'raisa, Rabbi Lozer Omer, k'shem shetzirim labayis, just as a house has hinges for its door, kach tzirim l'isha, so also a woman has hinges. And we know that from a pasuk shenemar v'tichra v'tehled kinefo le'osirel. The story over there near the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, that you have Hophni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, were killed by Plishtim, and Pinchas' wife, and then the Orin was taken captive, and Pinchas' wife is pregnant at that point, and the news of everything that happened shocked her so much that she went into labor, v'tichra v'tehled, she crouched down and started giving birth, because her hinges were turned on her. In other words, like she went into premature labor. So we see, in other words, the pasuk is describing the something in that area as hinges.
So
there's some part of it. So it's considered an ayah. Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua says similarly, just as a house has doors, so a woman is described as having doors. Shenema, kila sagar dalse bitni. As the pasuk says, kila sagar dalse bitni, as Eov says, and his complaints over there, why did I die when I was born? He says, why didn't he close up the doors of my womb, meaning the womb of his mother? In other words, why wouldn't the womb kept shut? And I would have died there in the womb rather than have to come into the world and suffer all these troubles. So the point is that the womb is described as having doors. Rabbi Akiva over, Kishem Shemachteach Babayis, Kach Machteach Leisha. Rabbi Akiva says there's another one, just as a house has a key for the lock, so a woman also has a key. That's another Eber. Shenema Vayiftach HaZrachma, as the prophet says, he opened up her womb by Rachel. So the question is, Rabbi Akiva Kashin Talmid Rabbi Shmuel, what is Rabbi Akiva going to do with the story of the Talmid Rabbi Shmuel, where they found 252? If you say you have 248, and then you have two hinges and two doors, and that makes 252. Where is the, according to Rabbi Akiva, where's the extra one? Why didn't they find 253? The answer is Duma, I did a Zutra, it's Muchi Mitmach. You could answer that maybe because this T, whatever Aver can be described as a T, it's small, so maybe it got dissolved in the boiler. So maybe, in other words, Rabbi Akiva would say that's no proof that there doesn't exist a Mafteach. In an actual living woman, there would be one. But now, when you boiled up the body, then that small thing got... So according to that way of looking at it, there may have been five X-ray volume, which is what Rashi was saying before. So but one was boiled away, and yeah. Interesting, by the way, that for a couple of interesting things in this. First of all, the Rambam writes 251. So the Noitz Kalim on the Rambam asks, where is he getting that from our Gemara? And one answer is, he may assume, unlike Rashi, who assumes that, Rashi seems to be assuming that not necessarily are Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva arguing with each other. They may, just each one is mentioning different Evarim over there. So altogether, if you add them all together, you get five. The Rambam may understand that they're arguing that what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, you have two hinges. Rabbi Yeshua is saying, no, there's not two hinges, or at least those aren't considered Evarim, only the two doors. And then you have Rabbi Akiva mentioning the team. So what would the two doors be? Whatever you're going to consider the hinges would be the doors. Would be, I don't know, again, what they mean in modern... So in other words, that's the point. In other words, the Rambam may understand that what Rabbi Eliezer is saying there are hinges and Rabbi Yeshua is saying there are doors, and they're actually arguing. What Rabbi Eliezer is saying hinges, Rabbi Yeshua is telling him, no, what you're calling hinges, fine, a woman has hinges, but they're not considered separate Eivorim. As the Gemara is going to mention soon, men have something similar, but it's only tzire boser. It's only ones of flesh. There's no bone in them. The definition of an Eivor is that it has a bone in it. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua... That's the point, in other words, but Rabbi Yeshua may understand that what Rabbi Eliezer is referring to as tzirim and what the Pasuk mentions as tzirim may not contain bones, and in that case, they don't count towards the number. So in that case, you only have three extra, two that Rabbi Yeshua is mentioning and one that Rabbi Akiva is mentioning. Okay. A couple of other interesting things on this. I mean, most given that, after all, Talmid Rabbi Shmuel found 252, there is a more widespread idea that that is the actual number in a woman. In other words, we're ignoring this idea of Rabbi Akiva and the key and that it got lost or whatever. A couple of interesting things that come of that. One of them is actually the El Yerabba says the reason why we have a minig for Shabbos that a married woman lights two candles and then there's a minig to add an extra one for every kid, but whatever. Why two is because the gematria of ner is 250, twice that is 500, representing the 500 Evarim total between the husband and wife. 248 for the man, 252 for the woman equals 500. So that's one idea that. Well, there's another reason it's because Shlomo is offer, but in that case, an unmarried woman should do that also. But there's the idea, a married woman, particularly because she's lighting on behalf of the number of Evarim for herself and her husband. Similar idea, I think, there's also brought why you have candles by a chuppah. Same idea, because again, you have 500 Evarim that are uniting together. But more generally, since all Gemara is leaving it a little bit up in the air, how many Evarim a woman actually has, this is why the Shara Kol writes, this is why in a Mishaberach for a woman, we don't say, L'ramach Evarim, Shisagideh, like we do for a man, because then that would imply that you're only asking for her for 248 of her Evarim. But if she has extra, whatever, yeah, if it's 252 or 251 or 253 or whatever, so therefore we say, L'chol Evarim, B'chol Evarim, Shisagideh, for all of them, meaning however many there are, she should have her Evarim. That's why. That's why, because a man is definitive that they have 248 unless they're deformed or whatever, right. And a woman was saying that it's good.
No, okay.
So, Omar Rab.
When is a baby, when she's pregnant, you say still she has 248, 252?
Yeah, no problem. So, yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, Omar Rav, Rava, it says on the side, V'chulam ein mekamin ba'oyel. Now, all these extra Evarim, whether we consider that a woman has three or four or five extra Evarim over a man, none of those are mekame ba'oyel. All of those are like other, all of those are like other bits of bone or flesh or whatever, where the mekame mago masa, but not the oil, unless they themselves are at least the relevant size, at least a quarter, they count towards a quarter cob of bones, or they count, or they have a kazayis of flesh on them, etc.
Which is what, an inch of bone?
No, because an Essen Kisoda would be a grub. No, Essen Kisoda is not a ton of bone. No, if they have a Kazayas of flesh on them, which would be a Kazayas, about an ounce. Or what?
A bone.
The Essen Kisoda, a bone the size of barleycorn in the tamid, but not the oil. To be in the tamid, but oil, we said you need rovinion, or you need rovinion, or you need a quarter calf, et cetera, yeah. So none of these extra three or four or five are mekame ba'oil. Shenema, as the pasuk says, zois ha'tora odom ki yomos ba'oil. The pasuk says this is the rule when a person dies in a tent, that then you have tumas oil, implying davar ashava l'chol odom, what evarim are mekame ba'oil, only the ones that all people have in common. So since these are unique only to women, then therefore they don't count. Okay. Okay.
These extra four.
These extra four or five or three as the Rambam says. Yeah. Okay. Abaya says to Rava, what do you mean? Ish like that? You're telling me a man does not have at least some of these things. But you have a pasuk, Sirim Achazuni Kitsiri Yeloda, as another Yeshaya describes, and he's seeing the Nehuah of the fall and destruction of Babel. He says Sirim, which again means hinges. And in the simple meaning of the pasuk, Sirim can also mean like labor pains. By Pinchas's wife also, it can also mean labor pains. But the Gemara is assuming that it means Sir as in a hinge. So hinges have seized me, kipsira yeleda, like the hinges of a woman giving birth. So we see that a man has these hinges as well. Interesting, Boster, you would say by a man, it's only hinges of flesh. There's no bone over there. And again, the definition of an aver, as far as the 248 or 252 or whatever, is that it has to have a bone. Say, Bahakiv, what about another prophet in Yechezkel? Daniel is describing over there how terrified he is after seeing one of the visions that he had where Malach shows him about the four kingdoms or whatever. He says, Adoni, my master, Bamaro Neth Hutsirai, because of the vision, my Tsirim have been overturned and I have no more strength. So again, a man has Tsirim. The answer is, Hochanami Tsirai Bosa. Okay, you have to answer again that it means hinders of flesh. Fine, but the Gemara is assuming, in other words, that it means that there is something that can be described in a man has Tsirim, however, they don't have bones in them, only flesh, only muscles. I don't know what the tzirim and dilophis are by a woman either, so I don't know. Okay, the Gemara says, Hoffi Nalim Stabra. Okay, you have to answer that way. It has to be that by man you only have tzirim of flesh. The Eloi came a Hoffi, because otherwise, if you're not going to say that, Mosayim Boshimba'aboy Moshmoina Hechamashkafasov, and how are you going to have 248, Loibe Ish, Loibe Isha? It wouldn't be by a man, because we'd say that he has 248 that I mentioned in the Mishnah, plus these tzirim. By a woman, we said she has 252 or 253. So you never have, nobody has 248. The fact that the Mishnah tells us 248 is a standard number means that a man's theorem do not have bones in them and they don't count towards the 248. Okay.
We don't know what
structures we're referring to. I don't know. Could be joints. It could be pelvic muscles. Who knows? I don't know. Okay. Fine. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, another case, yes, to be Yadav of Raglov. We said, suppose that a person has extra fingers or extra toes, where he has six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. So we had Rabbi Yehuda says that he's kosher, he's not a Baal Mum, and the Chachamim say he is, or the other way around. No, he said Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, the Chachamim Toysen, Rabbi Yehuda said he's kosher to do the Avodah, the Chachamim said he's possible. Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, Ushneyam Mikra Echadon. Then for sure he'd be possible. Even Rabbi Yehuda is only going to say if he has all of them. So wait. Rabbi Yitzchok Hushneim Mikra Echad Doshu. So Rabbi Yitzchok says both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are actually deriving their dinim from the same pasuk. Pasuk says like this. The pasuk describes there was another war between the Jewish people and the Plishtim. And you have, and the pasuk continues over there, by Yish Modon, there was a tall person over there. Actually, so we have, we're learning, or we're supposed to be learning Sota for Svira, so we just had the whole thing at the beginning of the seventh parak over there about Goliath. The Gemara mentions over there that there were four mighty men who were the sons of Orpah, the sister-in-law of Rus. One of them was Goliath, and then there were three more, so this is one of them. So who?
The same Goliath
is the famous one that David killed, right? And then he had three brothers. He had three brothers who also eventually were killed by David and his men. So one of them is this man mentioned over here, by Yish Modern. There was this tall person. He had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, and then David and his men defeated him. So why does the pasuk have to mention that detail? Mar Sovar, the Chachamim hold Bignuse Mishtori. The pasuk wants to tell us something bad about him, something derogatory about him. Look what a freak of nature that he was, that he had six hands, six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. So therefore, the Chachamim would say that pasuk demonstrates, therefore, that that kind of thing is considered a mum. Well, Mar Sova, where's Rabbi Yehuda? We'll hold Bishvachei Mishtoi. No, the Pasuk is telling us something favorable about him. The Pasuk wants to tell us what a powerful person he was, and yet David and his men defeated him, which is similar to, again, in Akimara and Sota. You have a similar thing where it describes, the Pasuk describes by Goliath, it describes how tall he was and the weight of his armor. Shesh Amos Vazeres. It's a six Amos, six and a half Amos. So an Amma, according to Rabbi Avraham Chayna, is a foot and a half, so you're talking about 10 feet tall, according to the Chazon Ish, that an Amma is 2 feet, and it's even taller, like 13 feet. Anyway, whatever. The point is, the pasuk mentions how tall he was, how heavy his armor was, how et cetera, et cetera. And the Gemara says over there that we haven't even mentioned half of what you could praise this for that Rasha Goliath for how powerful and how well equipped he was. And the point is that David still, with Hashem's help, defeated him. So the same thing Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here. It could be mentioning how powerful this guy was, that he had extra fingers and extra toes. You see how well developed his body was, and still they were able to defeat him. So therefore, he would say that's not considered a miracle. Amar Rabba, Mali, which by the way comes to show when we were talking about throughout this parak, we're talking about Enei Shava Bizarre Shal Aaron. You have a person who looks different than the regular run-of-the-mill descendants of Aaron. That doesn't mean necessarily where he has something which is better than the other descendants of Aaron. If he's stronger or bigger or whatever than the average descendant of Aaron, that doesn't necessarily pass for them. So you see, according to Rabbi Yehuda over here, the fact that he has extra fingers and extra toes shows that he's more well-developed, and it's not considered a more. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, fine, but nevertheless, the Chachamim could agree with the basic concept. They just say, in this particular case, we see from the pasuk that it's meant to be a derogatory thing. But for example, we're going to talk soon about somebody who's tall, for example. Amar Rabba, Mali Dichtiv Shesh Vashesh Esrim Ba'arba Mitzvah. Why does the pasuk have to mention all those details? That he had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 total. We can count up ourselves. 6 times 4 is 24. So like this. Swich, we need it. See, Kos Rachmana Shesh Vashesh, if it only mentioned 6 and 6 and didn't mention the total 24, Havamina Shisti Yabe Vashisti Kare. You would think it meant he had 6 fingers on one hand and 6 toes on one foot, and the other hand and the other foot was normal. Or Rashi on the Psukim explains a little bit differently, that we would have thought it means he had 6 fingers total, so he was missing 2 fingers on each hand, and 6 toes total, he's missing 2 toes on each foot. Therefore, the Pasuk mentions 24 to show that it's not that. But the cost of Esther and Ba'aba, but if it only mentioned the total 24, Havamina, who Chomish Mahai Gisa, the Sheva Mahai Gisa, you wouldn't know it's 6 on each extremity. You would think there were 5 on one side and 7 toes or 7 fingers on the other. Therefore, cost of Shesh Vashesh, therefore it mentions 6 and 6. And why does it add the word misper? Is benisperef al gabi hayad. This is what we learned before, that each of these fingers and each of these toes was exactly in a row with the other one. There wasn't a completely deformed one that came out someplace else on the hand or the foot. It was in a row with all the other ones. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda again holds that shows that this person was extra strong and extra well-developed. We said before, if it has a bone in it and it's nisperos agabe ayad, then yes, it can be the time of boil, even if it doesn't have a fingernail. Right? Okay. Tanya, we learn in a blight. So Amr Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda wants to bring a proof for his opinion that having 6 fingers and on each hand and 6 toes on each foot is a mila. And it happened that a certain person came before Rav Tyfrin and he had this condition. He had 6 on each hand, 6 on each foot, 24 total. And Rav Tyfrin tells him, may there be more like you among the Jewish people. So Rav Yehuda says, obviously then Rav Tyfrin is complimenting him, so how can it be considered a mum? Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham Raya, you're bringing a proof from there? No. What actually happened was, Kach Omalai, what Rabbi Tarfin said to the guy is, Kemoscha Yismatu Mamzerim and Nisinim Yisrael. Halavai, that all the Mamzerim and Nisinim among the Jewish people should be like you, with an obvious deformity like that, where therefore we can recognize them and know not to intermarry with them. No, he himself wasn't a Mamzer or nothing, but Rabbi Tarfin is telling him, look, if there have to be people who have that kind of deformity, at least let it be Mamzerim and Nisinim, so people will know, so people will recognize them on sight and know not to marry them. Whereas like this, you can't tell a Mamzer or nothing on sight, you might actually want to marry them. So therefore, in other words, according to that, Rabbi Tarfin is telling him just the opposite of a deformity. And therefore, yes, so again, that's the halacha, that it is considered a deformity, it is considered a Mamzer.
Okay. And therefore, you're not allowed to.
So a Kohen wouldn't be allowed to serve in the Beis Mikdash if he has this condition. No, if a regular person has it, and he's not a mamzer or nothing, go right ahead. You can marry him, sure. But
what about the woman? Can a Kohen marry a woman who has this condition?
Yeah, why not? Now, again, we learned way back when in Ksubas, that if a man marries a woman and afterwards he discovers she has a mum, which he had no way of knowing about before, then he can argue Mekach Toz. So something like this, extra fingers and extra toes, is not necessarily that he can, unless we're talking like in places where women wear burqas or whatever and you can't see them, but yeah. Maybe, I don't know. Okay. Actually, an interesting explanation. Actually, the on Tisefta, where it tells us where the Braitha comes from Tisefta, and the Pirush over there, Chaste David, explained according to the Yehuda, why was Reb Tarfon complimenting the guy? He would say, who's saying halavai there should be more koyanim like you, because if a koyan has an extra finger on each hand, then it means it can take a larger koyan.
That's true.
So I know. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fine. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Sholot B'Shtei Yada, we said if a person is ambidextrous, so then we had Rebbe said he's kosher, the Chachamim said he's kosher. So, we learn in a Braisa, Iker, if a person is a lefty, Bein B'Yad, Bein B'Rego, whether in his hand or whether in his foot, kosher, then he is kosher to do the Avodah. A lefty in the hand, obviously we know what that means. A lefty in the foot. So Rashi explains that it just means, in other words, most people, when they start walking, put their right foot forward, at first. This person puts it, in fact, the Gemara in Menachos tells us that is where we learn that you put the mezuzah on the right side of the door, because derech bi'oscha, most people walk into a room right foot first, therefore you put the mezuzah on the right side. So this person, we're saying, walks with his left foot first. Now, why is he possible? So Rashi explains because...
What happens if he writes in his right hand but he walks in his left foot?
So then that's what we're saying. Whether it's biyad or whether it's berdegel, if he's a lefty either on the hand or the foot, then it would pass him. Yeah. Now, why is that? So Rashi says because the koyan has to do certain avodas using his finger, and we learned back in Zvachim and in Menachos that he has to use his right finger. He has to use the finger of his right hand.
Right.
And this, and as far as being left-footed, the pasuk says he has to stand to serve, and that means he has to stand like normal people, where normal people put more of their weight on their right foot. It's actually interesting, by the way, that Ramban, there's a Ramban in Chulin that discusses the ins and outs of this. He says one possibility you could understand, according to Rashi, the vote is a lefty, a person who's left-handed or left-footed, in effect, halacha would consider that he doesn't have a right hand or right foot, and therefore his avodah would be possible. In other words, it's not a matter, for example, when you think of it, a lefty, let's say fine, a person is a lefty, it's not like he's physically incapable of dipping his right finger in to the blood and sprinkling with it. Nevertheless, Rashi says it's possible, so the Rambam says, according to Rashi, it may come out that actually it would be literally considered he doesn't have a right hand or a right foot in halacha.
He's
right-handed, but it's considered he has a right hand, yeah. But, he obviously has a left hand as well, yeah. Because normal for the left hand to be weak. The Ramban brings, though, other Rishonim don't learn like that. They say that, no, it's not a matter of that it's considered he doesn't have a right hand or a right foot. It's just he's a Balmum. The Nafkamina of it, there's a big Nafkamina of it as far as the question of Chalitza. If you have a Yavam is left-footed, can you do Chalitza? Then can you put the Chalitza shoe on his left foot? And the Yavam will take it off from there. If you say that it's considered that he doesn't have a right foot, then maybe you have a problem because it's supposed to be on his right foot. If you say that it's considered that fine, he has a right foot, it's just a Balmum, big deal. There's no problem with a Yavam being a Balmum. Okay. So there's a discussion about that. Okay, there is an interesting point, though, that actually the Chassam Sofer brings from an older contemporary of his named Zalman Emrich. This Reb Zalman was one of the Dayanim of Prague in the times of the Neu Yehuda. He wrote a sefer on several Sylvias of Shas. And so the Chassam Sofer quotes from him, maybe it doesn't mean just that the person puts his left foot forward first. I mean, that wouldn't necessarily be enough to make him a Baal Mum. This Reb Zalman explains what it means is like this. Not only he puts his left foot forward first, but also when he's walking, like this, you usually alternate which foot is first. We're talking about a person who he puts his left foot forward first, and then he's only able to put his right foot equal, side by side, but he's not able to put his right foot forward any further. So he takes halting steps like this, in other words. He starts with his left foot, then he gets his right foot, and then like this. So this Reb Zalman understands that may be the itcher regel that we're talking about. That would be considered a Balmum. If it's just a matter that he starts with his left foot, maybe that wouldn't be enough to be considered a Balmum. Interesting little story, by the way, about this Reb Zalman. They tell a story that one time he had to go before the Empress Maria Theresa of Austria, who was a terrible anti-Semite. Because of some zera or other, and while he's there presenting his petition or whatever, he screams loudly, like in a way that's, you know, very disrespectful in front of royalty. So, yeah, well, what do you think you're doing? He says, it's not just me screaming, it's all the Jews of Prague and all the Jews of Bohemia that are screaming through my throat. And she was impressed enough that she listened to him. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. He's saying, like, so to speak, like all the Jews of Prague who are going to be affected by this zera are screaming now through my food. And then she accepted that. Okay. Okay, so we're saying, okay, so that's if a person is left-footed or left-handed, then he's perfect. Hashur v'shteyadav, we said in the Mishnah, if a person is ambidextrous, Rebbe posts over Ham Mashir, and so Rebbe says he's possible, the Ham says he's kosher. Why? Mar Sovar, because Rebbe holds, why is he ambidextrous? It must be Chishusa Aschala B'yamin. It must be that a weakness has started in his right hand, and therefore his right hand is no more deft than his left hand, so therefore that would be a mum. Or Mar Sovar, whereas a Ham would hold Deryusa Aschala B'smil. No, just the opposite. There's a strength that he got in his left hand that makes it equal to his right hand. So therefore, again, that can't. So it wouldn't be considered a weakness. It would be considered just the opposite. His hand has its normal strength. His right hand has its normal strength, and his left hand has an extra strength that most people don't have. Which is similar to what we were saying before about the Einashav Bazar Shalaron means when he has something lacking, not when he has something extra. Right? Yeah. Mishnah says.
That's a very important point.
Okay. So the Mishnah says Hakushi. A Koyan who's black-skinned. Like I was saying yesterday, you could have, for example, his grandmother, let's say, was black. Or you could have people have mutations sometimes. Their body produces extra melanin, or it can come as a result of certain diseases as well, whatever. So Hakushi, Hagichar, we'll see in the Gemara that Gichar means somebody who's red. Balavgon, or somebody who's very white, like an albino. That you asked me the other day, Bakiteya, or somebody who is unusually tall, Bahanana, so unusually short, Bacheresh, or somebody who is deaf, Bashoita, or who's a shoita, Bashikr, or he's drunk, or Bali Negoyim Tahorim, or somebody who has a nega which is Tahor. For example, now if he has a nega which is Tomei, obviously he can't even enter the Beit Mikdash. He'd be Chayav Kares. But in other words, for example, Rashi says, let's say he has a sapata, so he has, for example, a shade of white on his skin, which is not. It's not white enough to be taras, but nevertheless it's a negatar. Other mafoshim point out, you have other examples. Let's say, for example, the Torah tells us that if taras spreads over the whole person, the whole body, that he's tahor, so fine, he can enter the Beit Mikdash because he's tahor, but he still can't do the avodah. That would still be considered a mess. If taras spreads over a person's whole body, then the pasuk tells us he's tahor.
So it's only if it's part of the body.
Only if it's part of the body, right. Okay. So all of those, psulim ba'odim, okshedim ba'behema, all of those are possible by a person to do the avodah, but they're kosher by an animal to bring it to the korban. Reb Shimon Gamliel, no, shoita min ha'behema, enem min ha'mulcher. No, an animal that's a shoita, like acts crazy or whatever, is not considered of the best quality, and you're only supposed to bring korban, it's from the best quality animal. So maybe it's not a balmum per se, but you still shouldn't bring it to the korban. Rabbi Lozo, remember, Rabbi Lozo says, here's another one, or Rabbi Lozo ben Yaakov, Hagoy Sabach changes it to, Af Bale HaDuldulin, here's another one, which is kosher by people, and which is possible by people and kosher by animals. If you have flesh, bits of flesh hang off their body, so the Rambam describes it either, either it means like you have lumps of flesh that hang off their body in various places, like wattles or whatever. The Rambam describes also it can be like their skin hangs loosely on them, so like you have folds of skin that hang down where they shouldn't. Also, the Rambam uses the expression, also if the moisture of the body is hanging off him, which I guess means like if, let's say, for example, so he has some kind of infection or whatever, and you have like oozing stuff that's hanging out of it or whatever. So all those also, psulim ba'adim, uksherim ba'hema. So he says those are also possible by a person to do the avodah, but they would be kosher by an animal.
So if an animal has a discharge, it's kosher.
So if an animal has a discharge, that's what we're saying. Or if skin hangs loosely on it, or if it has duldulin or whatever, yeah. Okay. Interesting, by the way, when we say over here acheresh v'ashoyte, there's an interesting point that Achronim bring up. Acheresh and ashoyte, we usually say, have no das anyway. How are they able to do the avodah if you're not allowed to do the avodah, but pashtus involves that? So there's a lot of different answers that Achronim give. Among them is maybe that's only required for Shchita, maybe the concept of Misafik, Rav Chaim Moser, for example, mentions this point in Achiezer. He says the concept that we say that Misafik, Posel, the Kodshim, that if you're just doing it like casually, like playing around, the accident is Shech, he says that would apply only to Shchita. Well, fine, Achronim doesn't have to do the Shchita anyway, Shchita, Kshedah, Bazar. The other Avodah, it doesn't matter if he does it Misafik. That's one answer, another answer. There's a variety of different answers. It can also... So that's how he learns. But the Chazanish, for example, argues with him. But there's a variety of different answers also. It could also be, for example, the Cheresh over here. The Nodeb Yehuda talks about this, for example. The Cheresh over here, the classical Cheresh in Gemara means somebody who can't hear and can't speak, a deaf mute. Maybe the Cheresh over here means he's only deaf, but he can speak. Like he became deaf later in life. So then he's not really a cheresh. So he's still a cheresh. He still has a mum. He still can't hear. But nevertheless, he still has das, and therefore he might be able to do the avodah. Same thing with the shoter. It might mean somebody who's not a total shoter. Maybe he only has some of it. Maybe he's like just below normal intelligence, but he's not really a shoter. Or maybe he's only occasionally a shoter or whatever.
So
if he was born congenitally deaf and they taught him to speak afterwards, like with sign language, or these days they can even teach them to speak verbally, Achronim talk about it. I know, for example, Shlomo Zalman has Tribbus about it. Tzitz Eliezer does also, I think. I think they say that in that case we can consider he has das, because after all he's able to communicate with the outside world. If he became deaf only later in life and he's able to speak, yeah, then for sure he said, but for sure he got that. Okay. So Gemara says, Kush, let's define the terms at the beginning of the Mishnah. Kushi means uchma, where the person is dark skinned. Gichar means chivra. Gichar means where he's unusually white, like an albino. And lavka means sumka. And lavka means that he's unusually red. Is that so? One time a person was going and advertising, who wants to buy a lukiyani? And it turned out that he was selling white sheep. Lukiyani is related to the word luke, like leukemia and whatever, which is a Greek word for white. So we see, so lavgan of our Mishnah should mean white. Ella, no, you're right. So we have to switch around. Kushi does mean uchma, means that he's dark-skinned. Gicher means sumka. Gicher, the Mishnah, means that he's red. He's unusually red. And the reason why that means that is because Amri Inchi, sumka gichia. It's a popular expression that people call something red. They call it by the word gich, or person who's red. They call him by the word gichia. So gicher of our Mishnah is related to that. And lavkon of our Mishnah is chivra. Lavkon would be somebody who would be an albino. And we know that, as you have this example where somebody was offering for sale a lukiyani, they stuck a chivri, and it turned out that he's selling a white sheep. So lukiyani and lavkon are related to the word for white. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, kipeach, another person who is possible to do the avodah, who is considered a baal mum, is kipeach, is somebody who is unusually tall. Tony Rabzvid Gavaya. So Rabzvid clarifies, he learns, he teaches the Braita, that the word kipeach means somebody who is tall. So the question, Hold on. So the question is, Aini, is that so, that being extra tall would be a mum? But we have a braisa that Rav Abahu taught. How do we know that Hashem is proud of people who are tall? So to speak, he prides himself on having created such people. Shenema, because they have a pasuk in Amos, it's that Torah of Vayeshev. Hashem says, how can the Jewish people be so ungrateful and be doing avodah? Didn't I destroy the emodim from their presence? Hashem goyva arozim goyva, where they were as tall as cedars, and yet I destroyed them. So we see, like Hashem, so to speak, prides himself, I created such big, mighty people, and then I destroyed them to make way for the Jewish people. So we see a tall person as a milah. So how can you call it a mum? I'm going to pop a ba'aricha shmita sanya. We're not just talking about the person is tall. We're talking about he's tall, aricha, but shmita, he's also thinner than he's thin in proportion to his height. So therefore, he doesn't stand up straight. He ends up having to bend over. Sanya, he's thin in proportion to his height. So in other words, you have, let's say, a person in proportion to his height. So therefore, like when he stands up, so he has a hard time standing up straight. So that he ends up like bending over a bit. So that would be sanya, and that's something people find that repulsive and hateful. So that would be, in other words, that's when we say the kipeach of our Mishnah. We don't just mean he's tall. We mean he's tall and then not and thin and too thin for his height. So, for example, we mentioned yesterday or the day before about Moshe Rabbeinu being 10 amos tall. So the point is, he's not a kipeach because yes, he was taller than the average, but he was also wider in proportion. Yeah.
So someone who's a kipeach means he's tall but very, very slim,
right,
thin.
Basically, yeah.
And that's considered
yeah.
a mum.
And that would be considered a mum. Rabbeinu Gershom actually has a slightly different take on it. He says that shmita means his face sticks out too much. And yeah, there's a condition called acromegaly, where a person has too much human growth hormone, and it causes their jaw to overdevelop and various other parts of their face to overdevelop. So, yeah, what?
That's what Beto
is. Yeah, right. No, Beto. Okay, anyway. So that's also part of the definition of kipeach. But not only he's tall, but also like his face is freakishly large or something. Okay. All right. In this connection, Amar Shlokish, Gavoya lo Yisa Gavoyas, a tall man should not marry a tall woman, Shemayet Mehen Toren, because their child might is going to be very unusually tall and thin. As Fatema says, by the way, the fifth, well, the past Toren means a mass of a ship. So yeah, like their child could end up being too freakishly tall. Actually, Sfasema says about this and the next few things that it mentions in the Gemara over here, that it may be that these pieces of advice may be primarily addressed to Koyanim. Try to make sure that your children aren't going to be Bali Mum. If a tall Koyan marries a tall woman, then their children can end up being a Kipeach, which will be a Mum. Similarly, Nanus lo yusa Nanusis. Similarly, Rish Lakish says a short man should not marry a short woman. Shem yeis mehem boi, because then a finger-sized person might be their child might be like finger-sized, literally. Lavan lo yusa Lavana, a very pale man should not marry an albino man, whatever, should not marry a very pale woman. Shem yeis mehem boyach, because their child might end up being a boyach who's extremely white, much more than normal. And Shachar, is a Shchora, a dark-skinned man should not marry a dark-skinned woman, Shemiyetz man to Fuach, because then they might end up having a kid who's as black as a pot. Okay. Tefuach, Tefuach means like the Shuras is a Shachar Kikdera, like black as a pot. Okay, then the Mishnah had mentioned, the Mishnah mentioned a deaf person or a shoita or drunk person, that all of them are considered are apostle to that avodah. So the question is, what do you mean? Why you mention the drunk person? Shikur machal avodah. A person who is drunk, if he does the avodah, he's actually machal. His avodah is possible, even the diabet. So therefore, he should be listed together with the other mumim that are machal avoda. We said at the beginning of the parak that you have three classifications: ones that are machal avoda, ones that are not machal avoda, and ones that are only mitnei marisayin. We're listing it over here among the kind of mumim that are more because ein shavah bizarre shalaren, which is the second category, which are not machal avoda. They should be listed together with ones that are machal avoda. The answer is, we're not talking about he's drunk on wine, we're talking about he's drunk on other kinds of things that can make a person drunk or high. One second, or deloik Rabbi Yehuda, which would mean our Mishnah would not be like Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda says that whether a person is drunk on wine or on other things, the same dinim applies. What name is? The Tanya, as we learn in Abraisa, ochal dveila ke'ilis, if a Koyan ate a fig from ke'ilah, Keila is a city, you know, in the south of Eretz Yisrael. The figs there, I guess, were extremely juicy and sugary and whatever. So a person eats it, either he gets a sugar high or maybe some of the juice itself ferments into alcohol and therefore can actually make him drunk. Rishata cholov, or if he drank milk, same thing. It could be he gets a sugar high from the sugar in the milk, or it could be that some of the milk ferments. Oidvash, or he drank honey, which actually doesn't mean actual honey. It means mead. It's a liquor made from fermented honey. So then he goes into the Bet Mikdash, he's chayev malchus, because this is according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rashi explains that in Christmas, the Gemara says this bright is according to Rabbi Yehuda will hold, if a Kohen drinks wine and goes into the Bet Mikdash and does the avodah, he's chayev misa, if he has any of these, as long as he drank a rebiyus of wine, yeah. On the other hand, if he eats one of these other things, this fig or this milk or whatever, then he's over on a lot if he does the avodah. The Chum disagree with that. The Chum say that only wine would make him possible to do the avodah, not shav dvarim amashakrim. So our Mishnah, which is saying that if he's a shikur, he's possible to the avodah. He's possible to do the avodah, but he's not machal avodah. That would be according to Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda says over on a lot, he's chayv malchus, but his avodah is still kosher. Okay.
He would say no.
Well, so actually, no, to be exact, sorry, the Chachamim would say, no, sorry, Rabbi Yehuda would say either way he's Machal Avodah. That's what we're saying. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. He's not supposed to serve in the Mishmikdash, but he's not Machal Avodah if he did. So therefore, we're listing it among similar things where if he did the Avodah, then Bidiyavid is kosher.
The Chachamim would say, yes.
The Chachamim would say, he's not Chayiv Malchus, and his Avodah is kosher. He's over on something, fine. He shouldn't be going into the Mishmikdash in such a condition, but yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Eluk Shaden Ba'adim Upsulin Ba'behema. The following situations are kosher when it comes to people doing the avodah, but possible by an animal. Till now, we've mentioned a number of mumim, for example, where it's the other way around. So now we have some things which are the other way around. Oisev Esbenoi. So we learned in Cholin that if you share, you can't shecht a parent animal and child animal on the same day, but a Kohen and his son, or a Kohen and his father, can serve in the Mishmikdash on the same day. There's no issue with that. Also, Trefa, also an animal that's Trefa, you can't bring as a Korban. The fact of the matter is, it's still Oisav Esminah. You would think maybe that, actually, I saw an interesting vote on it. Somebody wanted to say, maybe the idea is a Kohen, when he's doing the Avodah, is supposed to literally, like, he's being Moisav Nefesh to do the Avodah. Therefore, it should be as if he's being Shechted and being brought to the Korban. And yet we're saying that it's still kosher. Trefa, also an animal that's Trefa is possible to bring as a Korban, but a person who's Trefa is able to serve in the Mishmikdash. Because not considered a mum, because a mum is only something on the outside. Somebody who has a condition that he's not going to survive 12 months. The Yotze Dofen, born by C-section, an animal born by C-section is possible for a korban. A Kohen born by C-section is kosher to do the avodah. The Shenev de Ben Avera of Shehemis is Adam, also if an Avera of Znus was done with them, or if they kill the person. The reason why this is in parentheses, so those that would be kosher, possible by an animal, kosher by a Kohen. However, the reason why it's in parentheses is because Tosfos Yomtiv argues maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe, in fact, those are possible by a Kohen. If a Kohen killed somebody, so it says he shouldn't duchen, and maybe that means he shouldn't do avodah either. So maybe therefore he would say maybe that doesn't belong in the Mishnah. Also, the Hanoisin Noshim Ba'avera, here's another din. If a Kohen marries a woman that he's also to, a Grusha, Chalosha, what have you, possible, then he's possible to do the Avodah Adshi Adirena Hana, until he makes a neder that she's not going to be able to have Hana from him, or him from her. Mm-hmm. Meaning that he's going to have to divorce her, yes. Ba'amitamel, a Mason possible, also a Kohen who regularly becomes Tomei from the mess, is also, let's say, he works as a funeral home director or as a doctor or what have you, possible. He's also possible to the avodah. Adshi kabel olav shaloi yehematamel a Mason, until he accepts on himself verbally that he's not going to become Tomei mess. We'll see in the Gemara why with a wife he has to do actually a neder, and here it's just yeah.
So what about finding who is studying medicine?
Because it is an issue, actually. You know what? I actually read a fascinating story a few days ago that there was a German Rav in the 1800s, it was a Kohen. His son was studying medicine. He managed to get an exemption. He managed to get, instead of having to dissect cadavers and whatever like they usually do, he was able to. His professor was allowed him to learn anatomy from textbooks. And he's going and going and going like this for years. He's coming close to his final exam. And then Punk, the new professor, is hired by the place. And he says, nothing doing. I'm not giving you any exceptions. You either do the regular dissections or I'm flunking you. So he goes to his father to ask what to do. And his father explains to him the importance of, we're calling him. And then the son goes in and says, the son sends a telegram to the father, what should I do? And the father sends back a one-word answer in German, change. So the son, having Kibbutz Av, changed majors. So he did. He changed majors and then went into some other field of study. Yeah. That's how it is. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. The Eluk shared in Ba'adam, we say that we're following a kosher by people, and we mentioned my Ba'osav Espinoy. What do we mean that Osav Espinoy is kosher by Kainim? Ilay Ma'aron Uvana, do you mean, for example, that Aaron and his sons can do the Avodah together? Well, the Kabbalah say, Taish of Noi. So what would be the parallel by animals? A male animal and its child. So what's the problem? Minoi. Oisavas Minoi doesn't apply to animals in that case either. Vatanya, we learned in a Braita, as we learned over. None, actually, we learned in a Mishnah in Cholin. Oisavas Minoi, Noi, Vinakavis, Vain, Noi, Vishorin. That Oisavas Minoi only applies to the female parent and the child, not the male. So the parallel case doesn't apply anyway. So do you mean, okay, Oisav Espinoy would apply, for example, to a female goat and her baby? Well, so what would the parallel be by Kohenim? A female Kohen and her son? Kohenis doesn't do that avodah in the Mishnah anyway. So what's the parallel? The answer is La'olam Aaron Uvana. We are actually talking about Aaron and his sons. And the parallel as far as animals would be a male goat and its son. But, so what's the comparison? Oisav Espinoy doesn't apply to that. Amri, B'mar Rava, Meshmedet of Yosef Ba'oven, they said in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Yosef Ba'oven, Ado Omra, from this tells us that Hananya, this tells us, therefore, our Mishnah must be according to the opinion of Hananya. The Tanya, as we learned in a Braise and Cholin, Oisav Espinoy, Noig Menachavis, Ve'in a Noig Vizchorim, Hananya, Oimen, Noig Vizchorim, Menachavis. Hananya says it does apply to males and females as well. But therefore, our Mishnah would be according to Hananya, even though it applies to male animals and their children. No, the halacha is not like Hananya, the halacha is like a Chacham. Well, with that said, actually, I think we have We learned in Chulin, because it's not clear whether the halacha is like him or not, generally speaking, you don't have an issue, because usually you don't know who the male parent of a particular baby animal is anyway, but if you happen to know, then the suffix or Yisav Espinoi would apply. You wouldn't get Malkus for it, because it's only a suffix, but you would have to, yeah. So our Mishnah would be like Hanani's opinion. Then we said in the Mishnah, "Vanosin noshim chola." We said if a kohen is marrying women that he's not allowed to, so we said he has to make a neder that she's not going to have hanah from him, or vice versa, he's not going to have hanah from her, or whatever. And then he's allowed to do the avodah. So Tana, we learn in a brisa.
Okay.
Yeah, Tana, we learn in a brisa. Here, it doesn't have to be that he divorces her before he does the avodah. Neder v'oved, he can make this neder, and then, even though he hasn't divorced her yet, he's able to do the avodah once he makes this neder. Yoder d'magarish, and then when he's finished doing the avodah, then he can go and divorce her. In other words, we don't require him to do the actual divorce beforehand. So the question is, why does that work? Why shouldn't we be concerned that after he does the avodah, good, he's accomplished what he wanted to, he got to do the avodah, now he's going to go to a chacham b'shoyle, and he's going to be matir neder. The answer is, kosovar, yes, but the Tana of our Mishnah holds, or the Tana of our Braisa rather holds, tzorich lefaret as a neder, that he has to specify the details of the neder. So now, if he tells the Talmud Chacham, I made a neder that my wife can't have enough from me, the Chacham is going to start asking why, and he's going to have to tell him, and the Chacham says, well, I'm not going to be matir your neder. So the question is, okay, so very well then, this method works according to the opinion that you have to be mefaret the neder. Yeah, you have to give all the details. El mandom ain't sorry for fire to the nether, my ikomem. What are you going to do according to the opinion that you don't have to be fire to the nether? Now, by the way, technically, the halacha is that you do have to be mafarish as a neder. You actually have a machlokes about it. You have to specify the details. However, Tosis points out over here, the halacha is like that. With that said, though, in the Noisik Kalim of Shulchan Aruch, it points out that the general minhag nowadays is that people are not usually mafarish as a neder. So how does it work? How does it run? In fact, for example, when we do our first and daughter on Erev Rosh Hashanah, we say, So how does that work? So there's a number of answers that the Noisik Kalim on Shulchan Aruch gives. One of them is that nowadays, at least in their times, what's the common neder that a person makes is, let's say that he's going to fast X number of times for children. So fine, so the Chacham already has a good idea what the neder was anyway. You don't need to specify the details. There's other explanations. Implying that other than that, he would have to. The Magen Avraham gives a different answer, which is that maybe Tzorech L'Fayer Taneder means he just has to say verbatim what he said at the time of the Neder. He's not necessarily required to give the whole explanation of why he made this Neder and so forth. Right. So anyway, so if we say that he doesn't have to be Fayer Taneder, then what are you going to say? He might go and be Matir Neder, and then, yeah. The answer is Dimadrinin Le'Berabim. Okay, what we do is we make him take the Neder Berabim, and then he can't be Matir Neder. Okay, question is, okay, well then that works according to the opinion that if you make a neder in public, then you can't, there's no hacharas and darim for it. But not everybody agrees to that. El mandom yesh le'afara, there was a different opinion, which is actually the halacha, that you could be matur such a neder, ma'ik lamema, then what are you going to say? The answer is, dimadrinan le'adas rabin. The answer is not that we make them take the neder in public, but we make them take the neder al-das rabin. And that means, in other words, that the rabbin tell him, you're not taking this neder with your own das, where therefore you can later on have harata and go to a beis din and then have and be matir neder, you're taking it on our das. And our das remains as it is.
And he has to accept that.
Omer Amemer, and in fact, Amemer says in this connection, Hilchosa, because here is the halacha. Even according to the opinion that a neder that you made in public, you could be matir neder. Nevertheless, al das rabim ein lehafara. But if you make a neder, al das rabim, then there's no being matir neder for it. So that would work in this case. They make the kohen take a neder al das rabim, that he's not going to have hanah from his wife, or she's not going to have hanah from him, whatever.
So the rabim has to be present?
The rabim must be present when he makes the neder. I don't know if the rabim must be present. But at least he has to take it al-das rabbin. Maybe, I mean, he doesn't in front of Beis Din, but Beis Din themselves can be the rabbin. So then he can't be matir neder. However, once he's done the avodah, he's going to go and divorce her because, yeah. The hani mili v'dvar harashus. However, this rule that if you make a neder, al-das rabbin, there's no canceling it, that applies only if you're making a neder and then you want to cancel it, l'dvar harashus, in order to be able to do something optional. Like, let's say, for example, okay, so in this case, it's also for him to be married to this woman, but let's say, for example, it was a regular wife. Let's say, for example, he was married to a regular woman, not a grusha or chalutz, so somebody who's kosher to him. Then let's say he made a neder that that she can't have any on her from him. He made it al das rabim, let's say. Now he wants to be matir neder, so he can't. However, I will apply mitzvah yeshle hafara. But if we need to be matim neder for the sake of a mitzvah, then even our das rabbim were able to, because then the rabbim would want, then we say the das of the rabbim is, they would want him to be matim neder in order to be able to accomplish the mitzvah. What is an example? Ki hahu demakri gadri. For example, there was a certain case of a melamed of children, Adre Rav Acha, so Rav Acha made him make a neder, al das rabbim, that he's not going to teach anymore. Why? Because he was being careless with the children. So Rashi describes that means malka osin or mason. He was hitting them, as a Rebbe sometimes does to his students, and they were dying. So we don't necessarily mean, Mephoshim Peh doesn't mean necessarily they're dying on the spot, but in other words, it was weakening them, and then therefore, yeah. The Ritva, on the other hand, the Ritva elsewhere talks about, in Makkos, I think, talks about a different explanation. He says that's not what it means. It means he was careless with them, as in, for example, he wasn't making sure that they come on time. He wasn't being careful to teach. He wasn't being careful to correct their mistakes or whatever. So therefore, so they decided to fire him and make him neder al das rabbim, and he's not going to teach anymore. However, Bahadre Ravina, reinstated him as a teacher, Delay Ashtak to have a diet kavaseh, because they couldn't find any other teacher who was as precise in teaching them the precision of Kriya and everything as like him. So in other words, in the end, the kids were losing out, basically. So like this, they fired him because they figured that it'll be better for the kids to have some other teacher, but it turned out that any other teacher is not of such good caliber as far as teaching them with precision. So that was the divine mitzvah, and therefore they were able to cancel the net.
He said that precision is more important than...
Yeah, then whatever it is, yes. So actually, the Kitzaliyazer brings it in the Truva. He says, obviously, what it must be is they still made him promise that he's not going to hit the kids anymore,
right?
Because you can't very well take him back, but he's still going to be beating the kids.
Right.
But at least, yeah. The point is, in other words, if it hadn't been for the loophole of the Divine Mitzvah, that wouldn't help. Because the fact is they made him take a neder unconditionally, al das rabbim, that he's not going to teach anymore. So even if he promised that he's never going to hit the kids again, we wouldn't be able to reinstate him unless, because of the Divine Mitzvah, that's what allows us to. Okay, then we said Ramatamala Mason Fuller. We said if a Koyan is regularly becoming tummy mess, then we don't allow him to do the Avodah until he accepts on himself that he won't be Matamala mess. So the question is, Maishna Hoch or the Sagulay the Kabbalah, why is it when it comes to Tumas mess, it's enough that he just accepts it verbally? Maishna Hoch and the Madrinamle, why is it in the case of the wife that he also should be married to, we actually make him take a neder? The reason is Hosam Yisrei Toykwa. Because over there, his Yetzirah is more powerful when it comes to being married to his wife. Or in general, relations between men and women are a very powerful Yetzirah. Therefore, we need to make him take a stronger thing. As opposed to being the Tamil mess, it's not such a strong thing that we require him to take a net. Hadron Allah Muminah. This, by the way, these last dinim are also relevant as far as a Kohen is duchening. You have a similar din as far as a Kohen wants to duchen. Same thing. If he's married to a woman that he's not allowed to, or he's regularly in the time of the mess, then we can't allow him to duchen until he accepts on himself or yeah.
Married
a Geras? A Geras is also offered to a Kohen, yeah. Okay. Fine.
What is that for a Geras? A Grusha?
A Grusha, a Chalutza, a Zoyna, which can include a woman who had relations with, basically a Zoyna is any woman who had relations with somebody who's also to marry her. So it could be a girl, it could be a close relative, it could be a Shuvanacious ish, whatever. It also includes a Geotis, because we assume the girl is now promiscuous, and then therefore that she'll have been Mizana when she was a girl.
That's more of a subject, isn't it?
But nevertheless, it's still also. Yeah, and also a Halala. Also a Halala, a woman who was born from such a union between a Kohen.
It's also for a Kohen.
If her father was married to a woman he's not allowed to, and they had a child, then that child was a halal. As far as male halalim, they can marry a regular Jewish woman, and their children are not halalim. A halalah, yeah, it goes down through the generation. Yeah. The subject of this next parak is the dinim of pidyon haben. So we've been talking about the dinim of bechorim of animals. Now it's time to talk about the dinim of bechorim of people. Now, we know there are two mitzvahs in the Torah, two concepts in the Torah that have to do with bechorim. One is pidyon haben, and the other one is, which we learned from Bava Basra, is that a bechor gets a double portion of his father's inheritance. So first, we're going to talk about how those two things intersect. So the Mishnah starts off, Yesh b'chor l'machla v'ena b'chor l'kayin. There are situations where you have a child is a b'chor as far as nachla, that he gets a double portion, but he's not a b'chor as far as the kayin, meaning that his father doesn't have to do pidyon haben for him. Or vice versa, b'chor l'kayin v'ena b'chor l'nachla. You have cases where he's a b'chor as far as pidyon haben, but not as far as nachla. before the Nachla will occur, and then you have a child who's both, before regular, well, regular one, but also the Mishnah is going to mention on Mishnah, and the next Mishnah on Mem Zayin, I'm going to talk about special situations where we would think that he's not maybe for one or for both, and nevertheless he is. Yeah, obviously, if he's the first one born from the marriage, then yeah, there's nothing to talk about. Yeah. Okay, the Yeshayin B'chor, love the Nachla, love the Kohen, and then you have a firstborn who nevertheless is not a B'chor for Nachla or for the Kohen. Okay. Ezer B'chor the Nachla, the Ezer B'chor the Kohen. What's the situation where he's a B'chor the Nachla, the first case of our Mishnah, where he's a B'chor the Nachla and not a B'chor as far as Kidin Aben? So Habo'ach on the fallen. Number one would be the case if he's born after a stillbirth. So Rashi describes over here, let's say you had twins. One is stillborn or premature, and the other one is full term and is being born normally. Which, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Nida that you have, it can rarely happen that a woman can become pregnant after she's pregnant with the first baby. It's called superfetation. So in this case, yes, you have one of them is a natal and the other one is full term.
So the natal comes.
So Rashi describes, let's say then the nasal, the one that's non-viable, let's say, so let's say he's in 8 months, so he's non-viable, so he stuck out his head while he's still alive, then he reinserted his head back into the womb, then the other one came out. So the other one is considered B'chor L'Nachla, but not B'chor L'Kayim, because he's B'chor L'Nachla, the first one didn't make him lose out on that, because Rashi explains, when it comes to Nachla, you have a concept, the Pasuk uses the expression, Reishis Oino. Now, literally, Reishis Oino means the first of its strength, but Oino is also Meloshon Oino. It has to be that the one who's the B'chor, in order for the next baby to not be a B'chor L'Nachla, it has to be that the first one is Misha Libre Oinen Olav. It would be the kind of baby that the father would feel bad and would mourn for. If the first baby, the one that stuck out his head, is non-viable, he's an 8-month baby, let's say, the father is not going to be so Oinen for him because he knows that he's not going to survive anyway. But he never really develops that kind of emotional bond with him. So therefore, the other one is considered a b'chor l'nachla, but he's not a b'chor l'kayin, because the fact is, he's not tetereshem, because the first one came out, because the first one stuck out his head first. Okay, you have Meforshim discusses it. Arif Al-Ghazi, among others, discusses why Rashi has to mention such a convoluted case. Why not just say straightforward? There was a miscarriage, and then later on, there was a healthy baby born. And he explains, based on the Gemara on Omer Beis, where we start talking about Shmuel, mentions a case where the head comes out first, and the Gemara mentions how that relates to our Mishnah. So we see that it has to be talking about a case where there was only a head first. If it's a normal case where there was a miscarriage or a stillbirth or whatever, and then later on, another baby, then the whole thing came out first. It's not talking about just the head.
So then
he's not a b'chor as far as koyin, definitely not. But he still could be a b'chor as far as nachla. So fine, that could also be a case with b'chor l'nachla, but not b'koyin. But Rashi's not mentioning that because the Gemara implies that we're talking about a case where only the head of the other one came out first.
Why the Gemara treats that?
Because the Shmuel is going to talk about a din in that connection. We'll get to it tomorrow, by the Okay. Another example, even if the head of the first one came out while he was alive, and again, as Rashi said, he retracted it, and then the other one came out first, nevertheless, he doesn't prevent the other one from being a b'chor l'nachla, because the first one being a non-viable baby is only by double all of, the father is not going to mourn him. Another example, then Tisha Shiyotza Roshe Mes. Another example would be if you have a full term, and both you have twins, both of them are full term 9-month babies, but the first one stuck out its head after it was dead already, and then again it was retracted back in, and then the other one came out. Same thing, because again it's aimly by Java, although for the same reason, even though he was a full term baby and he could have survived, the fact is he was born stillbirth, and therefore it's now. Also, okay, Hamapelas Kimin Behema Chayeva Oif, Divrei Rav Meir. Also, Rav Meir says another din, another case would be if a woman miscarries a malformed baby that looks like a Behema or Chayeva Oif, Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that, again, Ein Libe Dava Olav, therefore the next baby, the next normal baby will be the Pchor as far as Nachla, but not as far as the Koyan, because he's not Petter Rechem. But Chamayim and the Chum say not necessarily. It's only considered Petarech and Abshiyeh beMitzuras Adam. Only if it looks at least partially like the face of a human being. So we'll learn in Nidya about Hashem in a few months. We'll talk about what the Chachamim consider to be looking partially like a human being. Okay. Another din, Hamapelas Sandal. If the mother miscarries a sandal is basically, the Gemara explains, a Nidya is a baby that got flattened out. Sometimes you have. There can be twins, or especially in a case. Yeah, so it's got flattened out. It looks like a sandal. So normally, of course, by definition, when you have such a thing, there's going to be a regular baby with it. You're not going to have a sandal without a regular baby with it. And usually the regular baby will come out first, and the sandal will come out afterwards. But if it happened that the sandal came out first, Oishulia, or Ashulia, an amniotic sac came out first, where then Ein Shulia B'loi Vlad, as we learned earlier in Amasekta, it means it was a baby. So it means, in other words, that the baby may have gotten, that we don't see a baby in there because it got dissolved. Oshvir Merukam, or she miscarried a formed shvir. Shvir is the actual skin of the baby, so it's where the baby is actually, where the embryo is actually starting to form, and it's a recognizably human shape, and then she miscarried it. V'hayotz mechutah, or if the baby came out piece by piece, in all those cases, it's still considered a birth. You still have keterechem, therefore habachrim b'chor l'machlav and b'chor l'chayim. In all those cases, the next baby, the next viable baby after that, will be a b'chor as far as getting the double portion, but not as far as kidyan aben, because there was something before him that can be considered keterechem.
To which the father doesn't attach.
The father doesn't attach himself, so therefore it's not rishis oine, but nevertheless it is keterechem. Okay, we'll stop over here because it's a matter of time, and we'll continue the Mishnah and continue tomorrow. That's the Shem.
Very interesting.